Well, hello. This is Bob Sutherland from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Wall Street Journal, from Reuters, Bloomberg, and from the business section, occasionally from the Raleigh News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They have served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Well, Fed officials felt that three cuts this year is enough. Most Federal Reserve officials believed last month that the three rate cuts they have made this year would be enough unless the economy weakened significantly. The minutes of the October Fed meeting that were released on Wednesday reveal that most participants thought this year's rate cuts would be sufficient to support moderate growth, a continued job market, and inflation rising toward the Fed's 2% target level. A couple of Fed officials suggested this view should be reinforced by additional comments after the meeting that further cuts were unlikely in the near term unless the economy slowed significantly. Consensus among economists is that the Fed will now pause after having cut rates three times in 2019, with its benchmark rate now in the range of 1.5 to 1.75. The central bank's key rate influences many consumer and business loans. At a news conference after the Fed's October 30 meeting, Chairman Jerome Powell had said that monetary policy is in a good place. But Powell added that if developments emerge that cause a material reassessment of our outlook, we would respond accordingly, and policy is not on a preset course. Well, the U.S. budget gap grew 34% the first month of the fiscal year as federal spending outpaced revenue growth, pushing the 12-month deficit now past $1 trillion for the first time since February of 13. The government ran a $134 billion budget deficit in October, Treasury Department said on Wednesday. Federal outlays totaled $380 billion, or an 8% increase from a year earlier, and a record for the month. That was driven by higher spending on the military, health care, and Social Security. If not for those calendar quirks, revenue would have grown 2%, in October from a year earlier, and the deficit would have widened 19% in the first month of fiscal 2020, the Treasury said. Well, while we're talking about the Treasury, let's read this one. Prices of U.S. government bonds built on recent gains after new concerns arose about the prospect for a U.S.-China trade agreement. The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury fell to 173 from 178 on Tuesday. That was representing its sixth decline in the past seven trading sessions. Yields, which fall when bond prices rise, have been declining for nearly 2 weeks as concerns about trade tensions have resurfaced. Bond yields slid again overnight on Wednesday morning, into Wednesday morning, rather, after the Senate passed legislation late Tuesday aimed at stemming what senators said was the erosion of democratic freedoms in Hong Kong. Now I'll read some snippets from the Wall Street Journal. Alibaba applied for a secondary listing in Hong Kong, aiming to raise roughly $13 billion. Disney's new streaming service has signed up 10 million users, the company said the day after Disney launched. Carl Icahn is pushing for the proposed union of Xerox and Hewlett-Packard, saying it could yield big profits for investors. Facebook reported gains in detecting hate speech and other forms of objectionable content on its platforms. Auto loan originations increased to $159 billion in the third quarter, to the second highest level on record. Trump in a summer phone call asked about politically advantageous investigations he wanted the Ukrainian president to announce. Gaza militants fired rockets into Israel for a second straight day. Hundreds of mainland Chinese students fled Hong Kong for refuge. The Justice Department suggested in a filing that it had no immediate plans to prosecute former Deputy Director McCabe, and the toll from superbugs is greater than previously known. Well, when it comes to buying a new car, the latest and greatest may not be the most dependable. In its annual auto reliability survey this year, Consumer Reports found that while newly redesigned models have the latest infotainment, safety, and fuel economy technology, they also come with glitches that frustrate owners. Problem-prone new models cause brands such as Acura, Volkswagen, and Audi to fall in the annual rankings, while Dodge, Chrysler, Infiniti, and Mini gain because they haven't made many changes in their model lineups. Overall, Japanese brands Lexus, Mazda, and Toyota led the nonprofit magazine and website's reliability rankings, followed by Porsche and Genesis. Hyundai, that's Hyundai's luxury brand. Rounding out the top 10 were Hyundai, Subaru, Dodge, Kia, and Mini. General Motors Cadillac was the least reliable of 30 brands, followed by Alfa Romeo, Acura, Volkswagen, and Jeep. The remaining least reliable brands were Chevrolet, Volvo, Tesla, GMC, and Mercedes-Benz. Well, the rise of technologies that help the elderly stay in their homes threatens to upend one of commercial real estate's biggest bets. Aging baby boomers will leave their residence in droves for senior housing. Developers and senior housing companies have spent billions of dollars over the past 5 years to build facilities that provide housing, food, and medical care and assistance for the elderly. While these properties have been filling up with people born during the Depression and World War II era, real estate investors are eagerly eyeing the massive baby boomer generation. That is 72 million people born between 46 and 64, or about 1 in 5 Americans. Their needs would require hundreds of thousands of new units if previous demand patterns persist. But this wager on elderly care is falling short of expectations, and there are concerns that it could become one of the biggest real estate miscalculations in recent memory, some analysts suggest. Well, the accounts are more than a tool for paying for medical expenses. The health savings account, or the HSA, can be a powerful savings tool if you approach it the right way. These accounts, which Congress authorized in 2003, are more than just a simple savings tool for medical emergencies. Retirement planners laud HSA's triple advantage and its use as complementary savings vehicle to the 401k plan. Now, oftentimes, when people first hear of health savings accounts, it is during this time of year. For companies with policies that start in January, open enrollment typically happens in the fall. During this period, many employees are stressed about choosing and selecting other benefits. Roy Ranthoon, a consultant, says, "I don't think people understand HSAs or health savings accounts. From my experience," he says, "the HSA gets 30 seconds of the health benefit presentation. It's all about the insurance, and then, oh, you have this." HSAs are unique in the triple tax advantage they offer. If you opt for a high-deductible health plan, you can contribute to an HSA by setting aside pre-tax earnings without paying federal or state income tax. From there, that money can be invested and grows tax-free. Additionally, if used for medical expenses, this money can be withdrawn tax-free before retirement, which can't be done with a 401k plan or an individual retirement account. Eric Rimjeski, president of Devonair Group, said since Congress authorized these accounts in 2003, the number of accounts and the average account balances have both grown over time. By 2011, there were 6.2 million health savings accounts. That's according to the Devonair Research this past June. And that number had grown to 26.3 million. More money is flowing into those health savings accounts every year. By 2021, Devonair estimates that number will rise to $67 billion deposited with $21.2 billion invested. While the 401k remains the dominant retirement vehicle, Mr. Anthon recommends contributing to both 401k and HSA, especially if your employer offers a match for either. Well, locally in the RTP area, a $1 million settlement that closed the doors this week. A $1 million settlement that closed the doors to the University Inn this week ended years of legal battles between the landowner and the motel's longtime operators. Orange County court documents show landowner RME Management paid $1.3 million in October to the Chapel Hill HUM Associates and Chapel Hill Motel Enterprises. They had owned and operated the University Inn for over 50 years. While a local development consultant had suggested to the town that a new hotel could be built on the land, there is no firm idea of what could replace the outdated two-story motel and restaurant. Jason Evans, managing partner of RME Management, said, "We plan to look into a lot of different options for developing the property, and we think that the community can be better served by something other than a similar hotel to what's currently there." Well, a recent move by J.P. Morgan Chase to shed risk on some of its mortgage loans, stirring hope that the tactic could help reduce the government's role in the $11 trillion mortgage market. J.P. Morgan last month became the first U.S. bank to issue credit risk transfers tied to a pool of mortgages. Their bond-like instruments have been embraced by the government-controlled mortgage guarantors, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, since their introduction in 2003. Like the credit risk transfers issued by Fannie and Freddie, those sold by J.P. Morgan pay investors a stream of income. In exchange, investors will shoulder losses up to a certain level if homeowners default on the loans in the underlying pool of mortgages. In essence, J.P. Morgan has bought a type of insurance-owned loans it had already made to borrowers with high credit scores. That, in turn, should allow it to hold less capital against those loans. The deal is notable because some analysts think that a new market for credit risk transfers issued by banks could make it a little more likely that the banks would hold mortgages rather than selling them to Fannie and Freddie. By extension, such an outcome would make taxpayers less exposed to mortgage defaults. Well, the owner of the Sears and Kmart chain said Thursday it will shut 96 more Sears or Kmart locations by February. That's as the country's once dominant department store chain disappears from most American malls. Following the closures, there will be just 182 Sears or Kmart stores in operation. That's down from 425 as of February. Just 5 years ago, the company still had nearly 2,000 locations. Both Sears and Kmart have been gutted by falling sales as people shop online or at rivals like Walmart. Last year, the parent of the Sears and Kmart chains filed for bankruptcy. The stores, however, have continued to struggle with many of the same problems that plagued them for years. Many stores are in disrepair, and the shelves are bare of crucial products. The latest closures are in addition to roughly 100 stores that the Wall Street Journal reported last month were in process of closing by year-end and are on top of 26 stores that closed this fall. The continued shrinking of Sears and Kmart is the latest setback for financier Edward Lampert, who had controlled the retailers for more than a decade and steered them into bankruptcy protection in 2018. Well, it is a happy hour at the Capitol, one near Rittenhouse Square, and drinks are on the house at Pete's Coffee on the branch's second floor. Staff tell customers to make themselves comfortable. This is a story from Philadelphia. At a PNC bank a few blocks away, customers approach tellers stationed behind windows. There's a Keurig machine for anyone who wants coffee. A visit to the two locations on a recent morning illustrates one of the biggest head scratchers in the banking business. That is, what to do with the insides of their bricks and mortar storefronts. U.S. banks have closed thousands of branches in recent years and poured billions of dollars into the smartphone apps that customers increasingly use for many of their daily banking needs. But customers still want the option of a physical branch, especially when they have problems that are tough to solve over a web chat. In 2017, some 52% of people primarily use their bank websites or mobile apps to access their accounts. That's according to an FDIC insurance survey. That's up from 39% in 2013. But nearly one quarter of banks' customers visited a teller more often than a bank's website, the survey found. Customers want the physical and the digital, said Tom Brown, founder and chief executive of Second Curve Capital. That's a hedge fund that focuses on the banking industry, and you really have to deliver both. How to best do that remains an open question. Banks are still trying to figure out exactly how to balance spending on branch upgrades and digital offerings to maximize deposit growth. Well, billionaire Michael Bloomberg is taking steps to enter the 2020 race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Mr. Bloomberg is preparing a possible bid out of concern that the current candidates might not be able to defeat President Trump. They say Mike believes that Donald Trump represents an unprecedented threat to our nation. We now need to finish the job and ensure that Trump is defeated. But Mike, as the spokesman said, is increasingly concerned that the current field of candidates is not well positioned to do that. Mr. Wolfson said Mr. Bloomberg was making preparations to appear on the Alabama's primary ballot. The filing deadline is Friday, and Alabama is one of 14 states holding contests on March 3rd, known as Super Tuesday. Well, some pension fund managers are venturing further into unusual investment territory as this year's plunge in bond yields makes it harder to find decent long-term returns. Funds are dabbling in riskier asset classes, including private markets, real estate projects, infrastructure financing, and direct lending. Some are making riskier fixed income bets, buying volatile assets such as the 100-year Argentine government bonds. Others are going farther afield, investing in greenhouses and waste management. Well, how do we get those types of return in an environment with low interest rates, said Duncan Hale, a portfolio manager at Willis Towers Watson, which offers insurance brokerage, risk management, and investment advisory services. He said he looks for tried and tested investment avenues that are slightly outside of where you've seen pension funds usually invest. Well, American car buyers' appetite for pickup trucks and SUVs keeps growing to once unimaginable levels, which is generally bad news for Japanese automakers not named Toyota. Toyota, Japan's largest car maker by sales, reported a rise in profit for the latest quarter and maintained its full-year outlook. Other major Japanese automakers have lowered their forecasts, at least in part because of concerns about their prospects in the United States. Historically, focused on sedans, Japan's automakers spent years playing catch-up in the U.S. market, refreshing old SUV models and ramping up production to meet shifting American demand. The problem was their rivals did the same, and often faster. With the wide range of options meaning slimmer profits, the Japanese car companies say. Mazda slashed its sales and profit expectations for the year ending in March 2020, citing the United States. The company overhauled its lineup in an attempt to get shoppers to pay more, and the new Mazda 3 hatchback and sedan went on sale in March to rave reviews. Nonetheless, U.S. sales of the Mazda 3 were off by more than 20% in the recent quarter. Well, on the global economy, global flows of goods across borders are on course to grow at the weakest pace since the financial crisis. That's according to the WTO, or World Trade Organization, as trade tensions and rising tariffs weigh on exports and imports. The body that mediates trade disputes on Monday said its leading indicator of trade flows points to continued weakness as 2019 draws to a close, making it more likely that international trade will end the year having risen at a slower pace than in any since 2009. That's when trade collapsed after the global financial crisis. In October, the WTO cut its forecast for global trade flows in 2019, projecting that cross-border movements of goods would rise by just 1.2% this year due to trade friction and uncertainty over Brexit. After a 3% expansion last year, the WTO expects the volume of merchandise trade to increase 2.7% in 2020. Well, American Express Company wants more business to accept its cards, so it's paying them sometimes in amounts approaching $500,000. The company is offering sign-on bonuses to some businesses that don't take its cards. That's in a bid to catch up to rivals Visa and MasterCard. The payments range from under $10,000 to about $450,000. Known more for its focus on upscale customers than its mass market appeal, American Express has long lagged behind Visa and MasterCard in the race for U.S. businesses. In 2018, Visa and MasterCard were accepted in some 1.3 million more U.S. locations than American Express, which had just 10.3 million locations. That's according to the Nielsen report. Investors have pressed the company to catch up. 2016, American Express said it would close the gap by the end of this year. Since then, annual dollar targets for its internal salespeople have increased at a double-digit pace, according to current and former employees. In some cases, the salespeople are dangling hefty payments with few, if any, conditions and discounted swiped fees, the toll that merchants pay for each card payment to even tiny businesses. Well, let's read some more snippets from the journal American Express, where we just read that one. So next one is TikTok wants to shed its label as a Chinese brand as the social media company faces scrutiny from U.S. lawmakers and regulators. The owner of CoverGirl and Max Factor, Cody, is paying $600 million for controlling stake in Kylie Jenner's cosmetic startup. T-Mobile said CEO Legere will step down in the spring, handing this top job to Operating Chief Mike Seifert. Slowing shale drilling activity is the latest damp on U.S. manufacturers that had come to rely on a booming domestic energy market. Chick-fil-A said it would limit its charitable giving to education, homelessness, and hunger after controversy over donations some critics said were discriminatory to gay people. The Justice Department is moving to terminate antitrust rules that have governed the movie industry since the late 40s. Sony Pictures Entertainment is buying AT&T's stake in Game Show Network for $380 million. The FTC is pursuing several antitrust investigations into online platforms. Well, the price of natural gas fell, weighed down by expectations for milder weather in parts of the United States. Natural gas futures tumbled 4.5% to 2.5 per million British thermal units. That's amid predictions of moderating temperatures next week after a frigid start to November drove prices up earlier this month. Since demand for natural gas tends to climb when people use their heaters in the winter and air conditioners in the summer, changes in weather forecasts can precipitate price swings. The lack of significant coal in the upcoming period is bad news for a market dependent on continual stronger than normal heating demand to keep oversupply at bay this winter. That's according to analysts at Gelber Associates. Well, retail earnings are in the spotlight, and some analysts are confident they will exceed expectations, adding to what already has been a strong year for the sector. This week brings earnings reports from Home Depot and Kohl's on Tuesday, Target on Wednesday, Macy's and Nordstrom on Thursday, and others. Analysts noting last week's rosy report from Walmart and the government's October retail sales report expect others retailers will outperform as well. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served the community since 1974, and they can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 832-5138. So long, until next time.